Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey there, Herman and Corin. So in the last episode, we talked about alcoholism, and it was a significant episode for me because I've actually never shared that story before. Over the course of my interesting or colorful career sometimes, and creating content on the internet and blogs and laterly in YouTube, I've shared, I think, probably more than most people about myself on the internet and in the public domain. But I never mentioned that that my late father was an alcoholic and that he died of alcoholism. And that naturally has shaped my experience as a human, I guess, to a good extent. And what I'd like to chat about today, Herman and Corin, is that, as you know, this I've mentioned already a few times. I became a father 7 months ago or so. So I'm still new to the gig, much as my son is new to the gig of being a small human. And my childhood is kind of marred by trauma. I never knew until a fairly significant, at a fairly advanced point in my life, that it's not normal to have very little recollection of your childhood. And I'm not sure. It's one of those things I'm never quite sure. Is that a myth? Is that pop psychology, or is that something grounded in reality? But without going into too much details, most or a lot, if not most, of my early memories are stuff related to trauma, whether that was domestic strife, usually related to alcoholism, growing up in a house with an alcoholic and screaming. It's painful stuff. And I don't want to co-opt this show into being a therapy utility for me. That definitely should be will be done in private, and I will not be done. I'm a big advocate of using AI for becoming more informed about mental and physical health, but I think you have to be careful about that limit of not using it for direct a diagnosis, whether a physical or mental stuff. But suffice to say that there was a lot of instability and the emotions, I guess, of fear growing up, and anxiety. And I think it's probably not for no reason that, not coincidental that I grew up to have ADHD and depression. I know there's a big connection between childhood trauma and later developing of mental illness. Now, here's what I want to talk about. Life can be stressful. And I guess one of the things I feel most drawn to as one of my missions on this planet and in my life is to make sure that whatever stress my wife and I encounter, we kind of shield our son from, and that he doesn't grow up in the kind of environment that I grew up in. So that's really what I want to ask about Herman and Corin. I think I'm one of those people who believes that, I think my wife does too, that babies know and understand way more than we think that they do. And I feel like, if that's the case, they probably know that life isn't a cakewalk, and maybe their parents are going through periods of greater or lesser stress. So I don't think, this is just my opinion, and I'm putting it out there so you can have an opportunity to debunk what I say with science, if it's to be debunked, that we can sort of cocoon our children to think that we're living in Disneyland. But that's not to say that we should expose them to everything. So what I'd love to get, Herman and Corin, is some parenting tips from you. I mentioned my challenging parts of my childhood and even teenage years, whatever that's officially called, whatever hood that is, that were really marred by a lot of trauma and stress. And I don't want to repeat that thing. So what would you say, Herman and Corin, what constructive lessons can I take from my past to make myself a better father and create a more nurturing and supportive environment, and stable? That's the word that I come back to. Stability is, if I could say anything about the ways in which my childhood shaped me, I think I'm probably a prepper because I was always preparing for something that often went wrong. And I'm to flatter myself, I'm self-reliant and a self-starter because sometimes I had to do that. So there's, I guess you could say, good attributes you can develop or resilience from this, but I'd rather that my son develop whatever will characterize his personality through positive life experiences instead of adversity. Herman and Corinne, over to you. Let's talk about the parenting of 2026. How can we create supportive experiences for our children and not create challenging environments that might be very bad? Over to you, Herman and Corinne.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Corn, and today we are tackling a topic that feels particularly weighty and personal. A housemate and friend Daniel really opened up in the last episode about his family history with alcoholism, and he sent us a follow-up prompt that gets to the heart of what it means to be a parent when your own childhood was far from ideal.
Herman Poppleberry here, and yeah, Daniel really laid it on the line. It is not easy to talk about those things, especially when you have built a career in the public eye. But now that he is 7 months into fatherhood, he is asking a question that I think resonates with so many people who grew up in less than stable environments. How do you take those difficult experiences and turn them into a blueprint for being a better father?
It is that classic idea of the cycle breaker, right? Daniel mentioned feeling like a prepper because he was always waiting for the next thing to go wrong. He wants to know how to move from that state of survival and anxiety to creating a nurturing, supportive environment for his son.
And I think it is important to start by saying that Daniel is already ahead of the curve just by asking the question. The very fact that he is conscious of the trauma he experienced and is determined not to pass it on is the first and most critical step in breaking that intergenerational cycle. In the clinical world, we call this reflective functioning. It is the ability to understand that your own internal states and the states of others are driven by thoughts, feelings, and intentions. Recent research from 2025 actually shows that this capacity is one of the strongest predictors of a high-quality parent-child relationship, even more than the parent's own history of rejection.
That is interesting. So, by reflecting on his past, he is actually building the mental muscles he needs to be a more present parent?
Exactly. It is about how you process the past, not just what happened. Parents with high reflective functioning can hold their child's mind in their own mind. They see the baby as a person with their own feelings, not just a reflection of the parent's fears.
I want to dig into that prepper mindset Daniel mentioned. He said he is a self-starter and a prepper because he had to be. In an unstable home, you are always scanning for danger, right? You are reading the room, checking the tension in your father's voice, anticipating the next blow-up. That is a survival skill in a chaotic house. But how does that translate to parenting a seven-month-old?
That is a great angle, Corn. What Daniel is describing is essentially hypervigilance. In a traumatic environment, your amygdala, the part of the brain that processes fear, is essentially on high alert all the time. But here is the constructive lesson. That hypervigilance can be reframed as attunement.
Attunement? Like being in sync with the baby?
Precisely. If you are already naturally inclined to scan for signals and read subtle shifts in energy, you can repurpose that skill to notice when your son is hungry, or tired, or just needs a bit of extra comfort. Instead of scanning for danger, you are scanning for needs. You are taking a defensive mechanism and turning it into a proactive, nurturing one.
But there is a fine line there, isn't there? If you are too attuned, or rather, if that attunement is driven by anxiety, don't you risk hovering or becoming an overprotective parent? Daniel mentioned wanting to shield his son, but he also worried about whether you can really cocoon a child in a perfect world.
You are hitting on a really important distinction. There is a difference between protective attunement and anxious overprotection. While we used to talk about babies as emotional sponges, the modern view of the mirror neuron system is a bit more nuanced. These neurons help the baby map your actions and low-level emotions. If Daniel is always waiting for the other shoe to drop, his son's brain might start to map that tension as the default state of the world.
So, the lesson there is that the most important thing Daniel can do for his son's stability is to work on his own internal stability?
100%. It is the old oxygen mask metaphor. You have to secure your own mask before you can help the person next to you. For a cycle breaker, that often means therapy, mindfulness, or whatever tools help regulate that nervous system. If Daniel can learn to soothe his own inner child, the one who was scared of the shouting and the instability, he will be much better equipped to soothe his actual child.
I remember in episode 312, when we talked about the architecture of cities and how our environment shapes our psychology. We discussed how a chaotic physical environment can lead to higher stress levels. Does that apply to the home environment for a 7-month-old?
It absolutely does. For an infant, the environment isn't just the walls and the furniture, it is the predictability of the day. One of the most constructive lessons Daniel can take from a chaotic past is the value of routine. In an alcoholic home, everything is unpredictable. By creating a rock-solid routine, Daniel is providing the exact opposite of what he had. The Harvard Center on the Developing Child calls this serve and return. It is like a game of tennis. The baby babbles, and you return the serve with a smile or a word. When those interactions are consistent and predictable, the neural pathways for social and emotional health are strengthened.
Okay, so we have attunement and routine. What about the ADHD and depression Daniel mentioned? He sees those as direct results of his childhood. How does he prevent that from becoming a shadow over his parenting?
That is a tough one, but it is also an opportunity for radical honesty. Daniel knows the signs. He knows what it feels like to struggle with focus or to feel the weight of a depressive episode. That means he can be an advocate for his son in a way his own parents perhaps couldn't be for him. In the 2025 study on intentional transformative parenting, researchers found that parents who are aware of their neurodivergence are often more intentional about creating environments that don't overstimulate their children.
It is like having a map of a territory that most people are wandering through blind. He can say, "I know this path, I know where the pitfalls are, and I know how to navigate them."
Exactly. And regarding the depression, one of the most powerful things a father can do is model emotional regulation. It is okay to be sad. It is okay to be overwhelmed. But showing a child that you can feel those things and still be a stable, loving presence is a huge lesson. It is not about being a robot. It is about showing that emotions aren't dangerous. Daniel can show his son that emotions can be processed and managed.
I want to go back to something Daniel said in his prompt. He mentioned being a self-starter, because he had to be. There is a certain resilience that comes from navigating a difficult childhood. How does he pass on that resilience without passing on the trauma that created it?
This is a fascinating area of study. We often talk about post-traumatic growth. The key is to provide what we call challenge without threat. You want to give a child opportunities to struggle, to fail, and to figure things out, but in an environment where the stakes aren't their physical or emotional safety.
So, instead of the struggle being, how do I get dinner because my dad has passed out, the struggle is, how do I build this Lego set, or how do I handle losing a soccer game?
Precisely. You are giving them the workout without the injury. Daniel's self-reliance is a superpower, but it was born out of necessity. He can teach his son self-reliance as a skill, born out of curiosity and confidence. He can encourage his son to take risks because he knows that if the kid falls, there is a stable net waiting to catch him.
That is a beautiful way to put it. Now, let us talk about the concept of the good enough parent. I think a lot of people who are trying to break a cycle feel this intense pressure to be perfect. Daniel mentioned wanting to create a nurturing environment, but does that ever become too much?
Oh, the pressure of the cycle breaker is real. There is a psychoanalyst named Donald Winnicott who coined the term the good enough parent. His point was that being a perfect parent is actually harmful to a child. If a parent anticipates every single need, the child never learns how to deal with the world. Minor failures in parenting, like being a minute late with a bottle, are actually learning opportunities. They build frustration tolerance.
That must be a relief to hear. You don't have to be a superhero. You just have to be there.
Exactly. Presence is the biggest thing. In episode 183, we talked about that hidden copper graveyard, the legacy of dead cables and infrastructure that we leave behind. Parenting is a lot like that. We are laying down the infrastructure for the next generation. If Daniel's father laid down faulty wiring, Daniel's job isn't necessarily to tear down the whole house, but to rewire the parts that are dangerous and make sure the new additions are up to code.
I love that analogy. It is about an incremental upgrade. You are taking the best parts of what you were given, and you are filtering out the toxins.
And let us talk about the specific trauma of alcoholism for a moment. One of the core issues in those homes is the lack of boundaries. A constructive lesson for Daniel is the importance of healthy boundaries. His son needs to know where Daniel ends and he begins.
How does that look in practice for a 7-month-old?
It looks like allowing the child to have their own emotions without Daniel taking them on as a personal failure. If the baby is crying and Daniel has done everything he can, he needs to be able to sit with that cry without it triggering his own childhood panic. He can be a calm anchor in his son's storm, rather than getting swept up in it.
That sounds like it requires a lot of self-awareness. Daniel mentioned that he and his wife encounter stress, and he wants to shield his son from that. But isn't it also important for a child to see their parents handle stress in a healthy way?
Absolutely. Shielding doesn't mean hiding. If Daniel and his wife have a disagreement, and they handle it with respect and then resolve it, that is an incredible lesson for their son. He sees that conflict isn't the end of the world. By modeling healthy conflict resolution, Daniel is teaching his son that relationships can be resilient.
It is about changing the definition of what a family looks like. It is not a place where you have to hide or walk on eggshells. It is a place where you can be messy and still be loved.
Right. And that brings us to the idea of community. Many people who grow up with trauma tend to isolate. Daniel mentioned he had never shared this story publicly before. Breaking that isolation is a huge part of being a stable parent. By building a community around his son, aunts, uncles, friends like us, housemates, he is ensuring that his son has multiple points of stability.
So, if Daniel is having a bad day, or if his depression is flaring up, there are other people who can step in and provide that nurturing environment.
Exactly. It takes a village is a cliche for a reason. For a cycle breaker, the village is a safety net. It prevents the family from becoming a closed, pressurized system where trauma can fester.
I think it is also worth mentioning the physical aspect of stability. Daniel is a very successful guy now, but he grew up with instability. Sometimes that can lead to a drive for material success as a way to create security. But as we know, material things aren't the same as emotional security.
That is a trap a lot of high achievers fall into. They think, if I just provide enough money, my kids will be safe. But the brain doesn't care about the square footage of the nursery. It cares about the quality of the eye contact and the warmth of the hug. One of the most constructive lessons Daniel can take is that his presence is more valuable than his performance.
His presence is more valuable than his performance. That is a powerful phrase, Herman. I think for someone who felt they had to perform or be the good kid to keep the peace, that is a hard lesson to unlearn.
It really is. In many dysfunctional homes, children take on roles. The hero, the scapegoat, the lost child. Daniel sounds like he was the hero. He needs to make sure he doesn't inadvertently cast his son in a role. He needs to let his son just be a kid, even if that means being a kid who is loud or difficult or unimpressed by Daniel's achievements.
It is about giving his son the freedom he never had. The freedom to not be responsible for his parents' well-being.
That is the ultimate goal of a cycle breaker. To raise a child who doesn't even realize there was a cycle to break. To have a child who feels so safe that they don't have to scan the room or anticipate danger.
I am curious about the long-term view here. We are in early 2026. Daniel's son is 7 months old. What does this look like in 10 or 15 years? How do these early lessons in stability pay off?
The longitudinal studies are very clear on this. Children who grow up with secure attachments and stable environments have better emotional regulation and better social skills throughout their lives. By doing the hard work now, Daniel is literally changing the trajectory of his son's life. He is moving from a legacy of trauma to a legacy of resilience.
And that resilience will be different from Daniel's. It won't be the resilience of a survivor, but the resilience of someone who knows they are capable and loved.
Exactly. It is the difference between a tree that grows strong because it is constantly fighting a gale, and a tree that grows strong because it has deep roots and good soil.
I think we have covered a lot of ground here. We have talked about reframing hypervigilance into attunement, the power of routine, the importance of the good enough parent, modeling healthy conflict, and the value of community. Is there anything else, Herman, that you think is crucial for Daniel to keep in mind?
Just one more thing, forgiveness. And I don't mean necessarily forgiving his father, although that may come in time, but forgiving himself. There will be days when Daniel loses his temper or feels distant. The trauma doesn't just vanish because you have a baby. When those moments happen, the most important thing is the repair.
The repair? Tell me more about that.
In child psychology, we talk about the cycle of rupture and repair. Every relationship has ruptures. What matters isn't the absence of ruptures, but the presence of the repair. Edward Tronick's famous research shows that when a parent repairs a mismatch, the infant learns that a negative state can be changed into a positive one. That is how they build confidence in the world. If Daniel snaps at his son when he is older, he can go back and say, "I am sorry, I was stressed, and that wasn't your fault." That act of repair is what builds true, lasting security.
That is such a practical and hopeful takeaway. It takes the pressure off of being perfect and puts the focus on being connected.
Precisely. Connection over perfection every single time. Daniel is doing the work, and his son is lucky to have a father who cares this much. It is not easy to look into the dark corners of your own history, but it is the only way to make sure you don't accidentally leave your kids there.
Well, I think that is a perfect place to start wrapping things up. Daniel, if you are listening to this in the other room or later on, just know that we are all behind you. You are doing a great job, and the fact that you are even worried about this shows what a dedicated father you are.
Absolutely. And to all our listeners out there who might be on their own journey of breaking cycles, we hope this discussion offered some light and some concrete strategies. It is a long road, but it is the most important one you will ever walk.
Definitely. And hey, if you have found this episode helpful, or if you have been following My Weird Prompts for a while, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It genuinely helps other people find the show and join this community we are building.
Yeah, it really does make a massive difference. We love hearing from you and knowing that these conversations are hitting home. You can also find us at our website, myweirdprompts.com, where we have all our past episodes and a contact form if you want to send in a prompt of your own.
Just like Daniel did. We are always looking for new rabbit holes to dive down, whether they are deeply personal like this one or just something weird you noticed on the bus.
No topic is too big or too small for us. We will take it all on.
All right. This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks for sticking with us through this deep dive. We will be back next week with something new.
Until next time, stay curious and keep breaking those cycles.
Take care, everyone. Bye for now.
See ya.
So, Herman, I have to ask, do you think Daniel will actually listen to the part about being a good enough parent? He's such a perfectionist.
Honestly, probably not at first. He will probably try to be the perfect parent for at least another 6 months before he realizes it is impossible. But that is part of the process too. You have to hit the wall of your own limitations before you can really accept the grace of being good enough.
That is fair. I just hope he gives himself a break. Being a new dad in 2026 is hard enough without trying to heal 30 years of family history at the same time.
True. But if anyone can do it, it is Daniel. He has got the drive, and now he has got the tools, and he has got us to remind him when he is overthinking it.
Exactly. We will keep him grounded, or at least we will try.
That is all we can do. All right, let us go see if he needs a hand with the baby. I think I heard a diaper change calling our names.
Oh, I think that is a job for the expert, Herman. I will stick to the intellectual analysis.
Nice try, Corn. You are on splash duty. Let us go.
Fine, fine. Lead the way, Herman Poppleberry.
Always. Thanks for listening, everyone. For real this time, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Wait, did we mention the website?
Yes, Herman. We mentioned the website.
Good. Just making sure. MyWeirdPrompts.com. Don't forget it.
They won't forget it. Let us go.
Okay. I am going.
This has been episode 351. We will see you for 352.
Can't wait. See ya.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.